from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. So glad to have you with us. We're still in Southern California, and we had a great evening last night with several hundred FRC supporters, and our special guest was Ben Shapiro. His comments were, as always, poignant and on point. I'll share his comments with you a little later here on Washington Watch. But first, several times since the Parkland shooting, I've talked about those, like the organizers of this past weekend's march that are focusing on the symptoms, gun control, rather than the source of the moral breakdown in our country. Well, I'm not alone in raising that point. Lawmakers around the country are connecting the dots between kicking God and religion out of our schools and violence taking over. Tennessee lawmakers are the latest to call for the nation's motto, "In God We Trust," to be posted in public school classrooms. We'll talk with the bill's author, State Representative Susan Lynn of Tennessee, in just a moment. Let me encourage you, if you happen to miss anything on your way home this afternoon, you can find it all later archived at TonyPerkins.com. And if you're on Twitter, well, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right. By the way, if you go to the website, pastors in particular, I want to remind you that we have the Watchman on the Wall National Pastors Briefing coming up May the 23rd through the 25th in Washington, D.C. To find out more about that, or maybe you want to send your pastor, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. All right. In God we trust. It's a simple enough of a phrase, but it holds so much meaning in America. And literally for people around the world, they are four simple words, but in the face of so much confusion and tragedy in our nation today, they might just be the four words that our students need most. Tennessee legislators are counting on it, hoping their bill to post "In God We Trust" in schools will give the students something positive to focus on, letting them know they have a greater purpose in life. Joining us now is Tennessee State Representative Susan Lynn. She is the sponsor of the bill. Susan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you very much.
Give our listeners specifically, what does House Bill 2368 require schools in Tennessee to do?
It will require schools in Tennessee to post the nation's national motto, "In God We Trust," in a public common area in the school where all the students can see it. And I could not be more thrilled that this bill is passed. I think it's long overdue, and it's quite appropriate.
Now, let me just ask you this, Representative Lynn. What kind of motivated you and your colleagues to follow what several other states have done? But what was the motivation here?
I'll tell you, we receive a lot of emails from wonderful organizations, and I really thank God that they take time to write us. Some of the organizations are very liberal, but some are very conservative, and they are family-oriented organizations. And one is the Congressional Prayer Caucus, and they sent out an email last fall talking about the national motto bill, and they had model legislation. And I looked at that, and I thought, I'm going to file that. I think this is wonderful. And it was to put "In God We Trust" in our nation's school. And we have passed this bill, and the governor should be signing it either this week or next week. And I do hope to have a public bill signing with him as well. But it should be very shortly in our state school.
And this is the same motto that stands above the head etched in the marble of the House Speaker in Washington, D.C. In fact, last month I opened the Congress in prayer, and above me were the words, "In God We Trust," the nation's motto. So this is really nothing radical. It's just returning to an understanding of what we in the past have recognized, that we are, in fact, a nation that trusts in God.
Absolutely. In fact, in my research, I picked out two quotes that I really love, and one is Ronald Reagan. He said, "Our nation's motto, 'In God We Trust,' was not chosen lightly. It reflects a basic recognition that there is a divine authority in the universe to which this nation owes homage. Isn't that just true? Those words are just so true. And it is a recognition. And it's not an endorsement of religion. It is a recognition. And that is very important for children in their formative years to recognize that there is a divine authority. And then also, John F. Kennedy said, the guiding principle of this nation has been, is now, and ever shall be, in God we trust. He said that in 1961. And I couldn't agree more. In God we trust is on our coins. It's on our dollars. It's on postage stamps. In Tennessee, we passed a bill last year. We put it on our license plate. It's part of our national anthem. Why can't we have this in our schools? Of course we can.
It's a great question, but it's amazing to me, given the history of this, going all the way back to the Civil War days when the Congress put this onto the money, and then up into 1956 when the Congress declared it to be the motto of our nation. Has there been any resistance or opposition to this?
I have received a few emails, really more over this past weekend because the bill got a little bit of airtime. But I have received a few very misdirected, misguided, and hateful emails and some voicemails. But they're not from Tennessee. They're not from my district. My district supports this bill at about 86%. The legislators, 81 out of 99, voted for it. And if I can just take a moment to thank my colleagues for voting for this bill, in particular Representative White, Brooks, Weaver, Gant, and Boyd. They were so helpful and just really helped to usher the bill along, and I'm very grateful.
Well, Tennessee State Representative Susan Lynn, my guest, talking about a bill that has passed the Tennessee legislature, which would simply require that the nation's motto, In God We Trust, which I said is etched above the head of the Speaker in the House of Representatives. It's, as Susan pointed out, it's on our coins, it's on our dollar bills. This would simply say it's on our classroom walls so that the kids understand that there is a higher authority, that that we have purpose and meaning in life. So you're anticipating, Susan, that the governor is going to sign this?
I am. He's a wonderful Christian man. He and his wife are wonderful Christians. I don't think we've ever had a more Christian, a more devout Christian governor in Tennessee. We're really blessed at this time. And I am confident he will sign it. I know the Speaker of the House will sign it. She's a wonderful Christian woman, too. And the Speaker of the Senate has already signed it. And he is a wonderful Christian man. And that's one thing. I hope people don't lose heart. There are really some wonderful Christians in at least in Tennessee state government. There really are. And sure, we have people who fall and make mistakes and all of that. In fact, we have something going on right now. But for the most part, most of the legislators are very strong Christians, and we really think of each other as brothers and sisters in Christ.
Well, Susan, that's not limited just to Tennessee. I think you're right. They are all over the country. We've got men and women of faith and conviction that are serving all across the nation. And let me just ask you that while you bring that up. How long have you been in the Tennessee legislature?
I was first elected in 2002.
Okay. And what prompted you to run for office?
Oh, goodness. I had never had a desire to run for office. I did not want to do it, as a matter of fact. But for about a year and a half before running, I felt a very strong impression like the Lord was going to do something special with my life. And I honestly thought he was going to make my husband and me missionaries. And I was at a dinner one night, and the current state representative announced that she was going to run for higher office. And it was like a hand came down and said, it's you, it's you, it's you. And I went, no. And I grabbed the man's arm next to me. It turned out he was a preacher. And he looked at me and he said, what's the matter? And I said, I feel like I'm supposed to run for that seat. And he said, well, that's wonderful. Do it. And I said, no. And I turned to my husband and I grabbed his arm. And he said, what's the matter? And I said, I feel like I'm supposed to run for this seat. And he said, well, that's a great idea. Do it. And I said, no. And I got up and I started walking away backwards, just totally stunned by this impression that had come upon me. And a friend came up to me and said, two men have already pulled petitions to run for that seat. And I said, great, where are they? And I signed my opponent's petition to run because I was running the other way. But it really only took that week. And I had always told the Lord ever since I became a Christian, well, my hands are yours. I'm just a servant. Whatever it is you want me to do, I will do it. And when he told me it was this, I realized, you know what? I might feel compelled to run, but that doesn't mean that I am called to win. And this might just be a journey. It might be an exercise. It might be something to, change me and fix things in me. Or maybe I can have encounters with other people. I don't know. There was no one more shocked than I when I won. And since that time, every single day, I treat my office as my mission, as my Christian mission. It is my Christian mission. And every day when I wake up, I just put my hands out and say, Lord, what will you have me to do today? And I truly believe that putting In God We Trust into our schools will give these students a higher vision. And it's really funny when the left writes me, you know, they don't mind the copper statue in the Hudson River of the Roman goddess Liberty, nor Justice, the Greek, virgin Greek goddess of innocence and purity. But you know what? Neither do people of faith. We don't mind that either because we know liberty. Liberty is a very high ideal, and it's really something that the Lord gives to us. And same with justice. Justice is an extremely high ideal. It is, you know, what the Lord brings to this world. He brings justice. He will bring justice. And hopefully, for most people, Jesus Christ will pay for their sins, and they won't have the justice served upon them. I know that's my deal. I've gone to the Lord and made that deal with Him that Jesus Christ has paid the penalty for my sins, and I won't get what I deserve, but I certainly do understand the concept of justice because of my faith.
Well, Susan, we are we're thrilled for your success there in Tennessee. We appreciate the fact that you've advanced this bill. And let me just say this. I do think the Lord did call you to be a missionary. And I think more Christians need to respond to that call and enter into the realm of government. Susan Lynn, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for your interest. I thank you so much.
All right. State Representative Susan Lynn of Tennessee about her bill, In God We Trust. Folks, look, we're the nation. I mean, with all this stuff that's happening, we should realize it's time we turn back to God. In fact, that was a part of what we talked about last night, both Ben Shapiro and myself talking about our need for a greater focus, not going beyond the symptoms to the source of America's problem. It's the fact that we've rejected God, and it's time to bring Him back into society. All right, when we come back, Ben Shapiro is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking, we're going to be playing clips from last night when he joined us here in Southern California. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served 5 United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, Chairman of the Board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, President of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique. Not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendars for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Mike Huckabee, Paul Ryan, Ben Carson, Steve Scalise, Kellyanne Conway, Kirk Cameron, Laura Ingraham, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levine. On September 21st to 23rd, stand with Values Voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the special early bird price, but act fast. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, just want to tie up that interview we had with State Representative Susan Lynn of Tennessee. Other states have taken this step. And in fact, I would encourage you to reach out to your legislators if they've not taken the same step. Now, it's a little late in the legislative season, so you might not be able to get it this year, but it's good to put it on their radar screen. Arkansas has done this, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Wyoming, they're considering this. I know Mississippi, I think, was actually the first state in probably, and I don't know, probably 15, 20, maybe longer than that, 20 years ago. So states have done this, but I think with the issues going on in society today, the violence in our schools, that this is an opportunity to bring this issue back to the forefront. So anyway, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, go there and send a message. If you heard my interview with the previous segment with State Representative Susan Lynn, send her a note. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. It's good to have folks like that. And I would encourage each of you to consider how God might use you. All right. As I mentioned at the top of the program, we're in Southern California for our annual Friends of FRC dinner, one of our big gatherings out here, several hundred people coming together. And last night, our special guest was a native of California. He lives in Los Angeles, Ben Shapiro. Here is a portion of last night's gathering as I introduced Ben Shapiro.
Well, this is probably the easiest job I have all week, introducing someone who truly needs no introduction. I mean, you'd have to live under a rock or in a safe space someplace not to know Ben Shapiro. He is easily one of the most articulate defenders of life, religious liberty, Israel, and free speech, particularly free speech on college campuses. It has made him a social media sensation and a podcast giant for having the courage to go into really the gates of hell to talk on some of these campuses. Most of us have watched Ben's razor-sharp mind in action as he effortlessly responds and dismantles loaded questions intended to ensnare him. While it's a marvelous thing to behold, I mean, he talks faster than most of us can think. It should also serve as an inspiration to always be prepared to answer intelligently why we champion the values and the positions that we espouse. It gives me great hope for our country that Ben is modeling intellectual honesty and civility for his generation and for all of us. We're honored that he has taken time to share with us this evening. So I'm going to ask you to welcome one of your native sons. Join me in welcoming the editor-in-chief of the Daily Wire and the host of the number one conservative podcast in the nation, Ben Shapiro.
Well, it really is an honor to be here with you tonight. It's always a pleasure to speak before a crowd that is praying for me, not praying for me to die. The Family Research Council, obviously, is an organization promoted to dedicating traditional Judeo-Christian values, which are in short supply across the country. And for this, the media have labeled this group a hate group. Right? They've labeled all of you in this room haters, bad people, evil, cruel, nasty. Now, you look at the people around your table, they seem like relatively nice folks, but in essence, these people are the spawn of Satan. Just wanted to warn you about that. And this is the commonly held view on the left of the people in this room because they hew to biblical values and because they care about things that were said at Sinai and by Jesus. And they care about the foundational tent poles of Western civilization. This makes you a bad person. Now, the most obvious example, obviously, was the Southern Poverty Law Center, which said as recently as 2017, quote, "We've always believed it's important to take on groups like the FRC that have a foothold in the mainstream. In many ways, they are more dangerous to our country than hate mongers who wear robes and hoods." Okay. The FRC, of course, still appears on the SPLC's hate map because that's how dangerous the FRC is. Now, you remember, it was so dangerous that in August 2012, when Floyd Lee Corkins invaded the headquarters of the FRC in Washington, D.C., and opened fire, injuring a guard. Later, he told the FBI that he wanted to kill as many anti-gay targets as he possibly could and smear Chick-fil-A sandwiches in victims' faces and kill the guard. Now, let's assume for just a second that the situation had been reversed. Let's assume that the FRC had some sort of map with leftist groups on it. And one of those groups was, for example, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. It was GLAAD. And somebody had checked the FRC website and then gone to GLAAD and shot a guard and said, "I did this because of my biblical worldview." Would that have ever stopped being on the front pages of newspapers? The answer, of course, is no. It wouldn't have. But this disappeared in under a week. It was really not even a 24-hour story. I remember when it happened. I remember I was shocked by how quickly it disappeared from the media. And the reason that it disappeared from the media that quickly is because a lot of folks in the media, maybe not in terms of the shooting, but in terms of politics, agree with the shooter. They agree that the people in this room are bad and that the people in this room are a true threat to liberty across the country. The reason the media believe this, the reason so many folks on the left believe this, is because the FRC is constantly calling out accurately the threat posed to religious freedom and traditional values by the radical left in this country. That radical left has, of course, increasingly infected the Democratic Party. And the more the FRC calls out that radicalism, the more worried the left becomes. That's because the left requires stealth in order to promote their agenda. They can't openly say what they want. Instead, they lie about what they want. Instead, what they say is that they are all about diversity and tolerance and unicorns that poop rainbows and all that sort of good stuff. But everybody in this room is just misevaluating. We're doing a bad job of evaluating what it is that the left wants, right? We shouldn't worry about anything. We should go back home and we should watch Stormy Daniels on Cinemax in The Witches of Brestwick, right? That's how we should spend our time. What they say is that we shouldn't worry because the social leftists in America aren't actually interested in coming after our churches, right? Don't worry. The social leftists in the United States, they're not interested in compelling religious Americans to violate their religion on issues like same-sex marriage. Don't worry. The social leftists in the United States are not interested in compelling religious doctors to perform abortions or provide contraceptives. Don't worry. The social left in America, they're not interested in pushing a campaign of eugenics via abortion. Don't worry, they're not interested in invading our schools, indoctrinating our children with values that we would never teach or approve. Don't worry, the social leftists in America, they're not interested in depriving parents of their rights to raise their children as they see fit. The left would never do any of this. Right? We're all just crazy. It's all in our heads. Except, of course, that none of it is in our heads. This is the actual agenda of the left. Each and every one of these points is the agenda of the left, and now it is being repeated by the heads of the Democratic Party.
All right, you've been listening to Ben Shapiro on Washington Watch here. Last night, we had a special event in Southern California, and Ben addressed several hundred people who were gathered. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to continue hearing from Ben Shapiro. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most: faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com. You are listening to Washington Watch, and I am your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, well, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. Okay, something a little different today, and it's because last night we were in Southern California, and as we had our special guest for this year was Ben Shapiro. And he shared with the several hundred people that were gathered there a really timely message, a challenge, really. And I wanted to share it with you. So we're going to pick up where we left off with Ben Shapiro here in Southern California.
They are obviously coming after our churches. And this was easy to foresee. In the state of California, of course, we've seen it more obviously than anywhere else. But we saw it as early as 2006 in Boston, when the Catholic Charities of Boston announced that they would no longer work to find homes for children because of the state's decision to crack down on that institution for not giving children to same-sex couples. Right? On abortion, too, the government has decided to treat churches as businesses for purposes of pushing anti-traditional social agendas. After the passage of Obamacare, the Obama administration, thank God they're gone, decided it would be mandatory for churches to issue forms to the government notifying the government that the churches would not be covering contraceptive care. And once you issued that notice, then the government would step in and provide the contraceptive care. And of course, when the nuns of the Little Sisters of the Poor protested, the Obama administration tried to cram down its policy nonetheless. And the consequences, they threatened, if the nuns refused to fill out the forms, $70 million in fines. And thank God the Supreme Court sided with the nuns, and thanks to Justice Gorsuch, will continue to do so. For now. Right, California is ground zero on all of this stuff, of course, and they've utilized Obamacare's mandate for abortion coverage to crack down on businesses across the state. All of them were, by law, just about a year and a half ago, forced to provide so-called comprehensive coverage. All plans that do not cover abortion have been banned in the state of California. And this is the stuff that is happening on the part of the left. And they're telling us it's all delusion. It's all craziness. How could we possibly think that they're out to get us? They say that they are not in favor of extreme abortion policies. They just want a rational, reasonable regimen of abortion. I don't even know what that means, but this is apparently their stated standard. Obviously, the Democratic Party standard is that rational and reasonable means for any reason up to the point the baby pops out of the woman, right? So 1 minute after the baby pops out, it's a baby. 1 minute before, it was just whatever. This is their open perspective in the Democratic Party platform. But we're the extremists. We're the extremists because we say that from the point when a life is created, it's a life. They're not extreme for saying that if you plunge a scissors into the skull of a child 1 minute before it enters the magical vaginal canal, then if we say that's a problem, that's because we're crazy. We're extreme. Somehow the vaginal canal confers personhood or some such nonsense. Okay, the left is fully embracing this sort of stuff. They're even embracing everything up to and including eugenics. I mean, there's an amazing column, I don't know if you folks saw this, in the Washington Post just last week. Unbelievable column that really reflects the worst excesses of what was happening in the early 20th century with eugenics in the United States. In the early 20th century, for folks who don't know, the progressive left was a big fan of killing babies that they saw as unfit, or at least preventing people from producing those babies. They wanted to sterilize what they called the mentally unfit. There's a very famous Supreme Court case in 1927 called Buck v. Bell. The famed and much ballyhooed Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Oliver Wendell Holmes, he came out in that case, and he said that it was fine for a state to prevent mentally unfit people from procreating, that they could be forcibly sterilized by the government. His line was, three generations of imbeciles are enough. Right? This is part of Supreme Court jurisprudence. We thought those bad old days were gone. They are not. Ruth Marcus of the Washington Post wrote this last week about what she would have done if she'd been pregnant with a Down syndrome baby. Quote, I can say without hesitation that, tragic as it would have been, and ghastly as a second trimester abortion would have been, I would have terminated those pregnancies had the testing come back positive. I would have grieved the loss and moved on. I'm going to be blunt here. That was not the child I wanted. You can call me selfish or worse, but I am in good company. No, she's in actually very, very bad company. And in the future, she will be even in worse company, if religion has anything to say about it. Right? These are not the activities of good people. But this is what the left prefers. This is the morality the left prefers. Then they claim that we're the extremists. They're invading our private schools. When they say we're gonna leave your kids alone, they will not leave our kids alone. Okay, private schools are next on the agenda. They will come after the private schools. They will change the teaching standards. They will force private schools to hire particular people. They will change what you're allowed to teach in schools. In our state, state law mandates the teaching in public schools of LGBT history from K through 8. Advocates like James Michael Nichols want children to learn about Harvey Milk and Christine Jorgensen when they are 7 years old. Hey, it doesn't stop there, of course. In Massachusetts, a judge ruled that a private Catholic school had to be punished for the crime of hiring a gay man who did not reveal that he was gay, then rescinding the offer after he listed his husband as an emergency contact. A gay teacher sued a private school in Georgia for firing him after he announced his same-sex marriage on Facebook. Another administrator did the same in Washington State, even though he had agreed by contract to abide by Catholic principle, and then he hid his homosexual lifestyle from the school by listing his boyfriend as a roommate. Now, of course, that the Supreme Court, under the auspices of that major intellect, Justice Anthony Kennedy, has decided that same-sex marriage is the law of the land, you can count on them coming after private schools by suggesting that all of these private schools are, in fact, engaged in discrimination under federal law, and that all nonprofit status for every church, synagogue, and private school that is religious in America must be revoked. This is the next step. This is where they're going. They're going to use the precedence of Bob Jones University, a case in the early 1980s in which they revoked the nonprofit status of Bob Jones University because it prevented segregated dating or interracial dating. You know, bad policy, but that has nothing to do with the IRS. They said that for public policy reasons, they could prevent Bob Jones University from having its nonprofit status. They will do exactly the same thing to religious schools. They will say, if you do not allow gay rights to be taught in your school, if you do not allow gay teachers to be hired by your school, if you do not allow transgender teachers, Bob comes in tomorrow and he's Millie. If you don't allow that to happen at your school, then we will remove your nonprofit status.
You are listening to Washington Watch. That is Ben Shapiro. He was with us last night here in Southern California for a Friends of FRC dinner. And we're going to finish on the other side of this break with the remainder of what Ben had to share with us last night. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch and my closing thoughts here in just a moment. Don't go away.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, Chairman of the Board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, President of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
You are listening to Washington Watch, and I am Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. As I mentioned at the top of the program, we're still in Southern California. We were out here for our annual Friends of FRC dinner, which we do every year with several hundred supporters. Great time last night here in Orange County. And our special guest this year was Ben Shapiro. And he's a native of California, lives in Los Angeles. I'm sure you've seen him, unless you've been living under a rock somewhere or living in a space, safe space, as I said when I introduced him. He really is focused on the younger generation, going to college campuses and challenging them. And he has a unique way of communicating, very bright, sharp. And anyway, we wanted to share this with you. So here's the close of Ben's remarks last night here in Southern California.
These are the next steps. And finally, the last step, of course, is they will invade our homes. Right? The great lie, of course, is that this will all stop. They say, it will. Don't worry, it'll stop at the schools. We won't go any further than that. Right? It'll stop at civil marriage. Right? It'll stop at civil unions. We won't go. Are you kidding? Same-sex marriage? Are you crazy? We'll never go for that. Okay, so fine, civil unions, fine. And then same-sex marriage. Don't worry. How is it going to harm you? It's never going to harm you. It's going to be fine. Everything's going to be cool. We won't bother you in your places of work. What do you think we are, fascists? And then they go into the places of work, and then they say, well, don't worry. Your churches will be fine. We will stop right at the walls, right? We'll go right up to the walls, but then right at the wall of the church, we understand that's sacrosanct space, and like Quasimodo and Esmeralda can hide in there, it'll be just fine. That's your sanctuary. Everything will be great. And then, of course, they will invade the church. And then you'll take your kids and you'll say, fine, I will just keep them at home. I'll homeschool my kids. I'll religiously educate my kids at home. And they'll say, don't worry. It's your home. We would never come into your home. They're coming into your home. Okay, that is the next step. It's already happening in Canada. In Ontario, Canada, the madness has already begun. Bill 89, which already passed in Ontario, added gender identity and gender expression to Ontario's human rights code. Okay, what that actually does is it means that if you want to foster a child or adopt a child and you don't believe that a five-year-old child who is a boy can turn into a five-year-old girl, the government of Canada will not allow you to foster that child or adopt that child. It's happening in the United States too. Just a couple of months ago in February, well, last month, right, a Hamilton County judge gave custody of a transgender teen in the United States in Ohio to grandparents rather than parents, so that the biologically female 17-year-old could begin hormone treatment to become biologically male, which, of course, is impossible. The parents wanted their daughter to seek treatment other than bodily mutilation. And a court said, no, we will hand this teen to the grandparents rather than the parents. This is coming, and it is coming fast. And this is why the FRC is so vital. Okay, this is why this organization is so vital. Because the threat is real. Okay, everything that the left has said they are not into 10 years ago is now the law. And everything they say they're not into now will be the law in 10 years until we stand up and we say no. And what's even worse than that, is if you look at our young people, I talk to young people all the time, right? I speak at 25, 30 college campuses a year. We have about 1 million listeners to our podcast. 70% of those kids are under the age of 35. We have an enormously young audience. There's a crisis of meaning that is happening among young people. That crisis of meaning is directly related to loss of religion in the United States. There is no doubt about this. Okay, the suicide rates have tripled among young people in the United States between 2006 and 2016. There's a reason for this. Right now, young American children growing up in the freest, most prosperous country in the history of mankind are killing themselves at record rates. And this is happening for a very specific reason. It is happening because we are not providing them meaning. And I don't mean the people in this room, really, because I think all of us spend our lives trying to figure out how we provide that meaning for our kids. I mean, our culture is militantly opposed to us providing that meaning for our children. They're supposed to find meaning in whatever the social justice buzzword of the day is. They're supposed to find meaning in the idea that they get to define their own meaning, that their morality is above God's morality, that there is no transcendent truth, there is just the truth that's inside of you, there's just your truth. All religious people know there is a difference between your truth, which is just called what you're feeling like today, and the truth, which has nothing to do with you and comes from a higher place. Most of human history, most of Western civilization, is built on a quest to uncover these transcendental truths. Whether you're talking about Revelation at Sinai, or whether you're talking about the words of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, or whether you're talking about the search for God that was posited by Aristotle and Plato, the search for something higher, the search for something transcendental. Even Marxism is an attempt to find a transcendental truth in all the wrong places. Human beings need transcendental truths. And if we do not find those, if we are not allowed to teach real transcendental truths to our children, if we are not allowed to teach meaning to our children, they will find meaning in some of the worst places they possibly can. That is the history of the 20th century. You reject God and you find meaning everywhere else. There's a God-shaped hole in the human heart. And when you remove God, as Nietzsche said, when God is dead, who is left to guide us? And if the answer is man, man did an awful lot of killing of other human beings because human beings were trying to find that meaning in places other than God. Okay, hundreds of millions of people died in the 20th century because there was an attempt to push God out of public life. A forcible attempt to push God out of public life in the Soviet Union and in Nazi Germany and today in places like North Korea and in places like China. And in large part, it's moving toward the progressive arena in Europe and the United States. And people don't know where to look. People don't know where to look. And the answer is you have to look back to the beginning. And we know this, right? That's what we're talking about. We are talking about the deepest truths that you can possibly have purpose to pursue. What we are put on earth to do, to find these truths and to push these truths and to be a light unto the nations. Our founders knew this. Our founders knew that our system of government would not work unless we bought into these truths. Our founders understood that the only way that a limited government could stand is if we were a virtuous people. There's a whole school of thought that says that the founders got it wrong. They focused too much on rights and not enough on duties. But the fact is that if you read the founders, you see that's not true. The founders understood you could only have rights if you fulfilled your duties. And those duties were duties to God. They were duties to your fellow man. De Tocqueville was quite clear about the fact that what separated the United States from Europe was not our Constitution. What separated the United States from Europe was the fact that we were all members of social groups, that we all went to church together, right? That we all went to synagogue together, that we founded communities together. The left focuses on diversity. Diversity doesn't mean anything. Okay, diversity of skin color doesn't mean anything because skin color doesn't mean anything. Robert Putnam, who's a sociologist at Harvard University, wrote a very famous book called Bowling Alone. And in his book, he went into the book thinking diversity is our answer. Diversity is our strength, right? As the slogan goes. This is the lefty slogan. And Robert Putnam's a Democrat. And Robert Putnam wrote this entire book. And what he came to after doing all the research is diversity in a given community doesn't increase anything, these are his words, except for protest marches and TV watching. Right? Racial diversity doesn't increase anything. Where diversity does matter, where diversity is an added good, is in religious communities. When you have a common purpose, then diversity is great. When you don't have a common purpose, diversity tears people apart. Because people tend to fall back into ethnic stereotyping and people tend to fall back into tribalism. And in large part, that's what's happening in the United States right now. We're tearing each other apart because we don't have a common vision of what the U.S. is supposed to be and what we are supposed to be as human beings. We used to share all of these things. And this has fallen away in the last couple of decades, really in my lifetime, in a pretty amazing way. The founders saw that this would happen, right? John Adams said, "We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." George Washington said, in I believe his second inaugural, "The foundation of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality. Since there exists in economy and the course of nature an indissoluble union between virtue and happiness, between duty and advantage, the propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained." Our founders knew this better than anyone. They understood that human reason, connected with human faith, this is what creates civilizations. And we have decided to abandon that in the United States, but this is where we have to fight back. And I think this is beyond party. I don't think this even has to do with party. I think that certain parties represent these values better than other parties. But I think that the crisis of meaning can't be solved at the top of the iceberg. It has to be solved at the value level. It has to be solved below the waterline. And that's what FRC is trying to do by changing hearts and by changing minds and by giving us all the freedom to go back home and teach our kids as we see fit. You know, I started in this movement when I was 17 years old. I was a syndicated columnist when I was 17 years old. So I've spent literally half my life in this movement because I'm now 34. I've been married for almost 10 years in July, and I have two kids. I have a 4-year-old daughter and I have a 2-year-old son. They're beautiful and wonderful, and I can't wait to get home to them tonight because they're spectacular. And when you have young kids, one of the things that you do, everybody in this room knows because most folks in this room have kids and are older than I am, is you sit around at night and you wonder, what am I supposed to teach these kids? Right? How am I supposed to come up with a system of morality that works for these kids in what is a really degraded time? Right? This is a degraded time. We live in California. I live in Los Angeles. We're all near Hollywood. Okay? Suffice it to say that we live in a culture that treasured Harvey Weinstein up until the moment it turned out he raped half the town. So we're living in a place that is filled with just gunk and dreck and garbage. So how do I bring up my kids in this? And the only thing that I can do is turn back to words that came 3,000 years before me, is turned back to the wisdom that's been gathered up through ages. Robert Frost, or I believe it was rather G.K. Chesterton, famously said, the difference between the left and the right is that if you're on the left and you see a fence in the middle of a field, and you don't know what it's for, your first reaction is to pry up the fence and remove it. And if you're on the right, your first reaction is to say, I wonder why that fence is there, let me figure out why that fence is there, and then maybe I'll think about removing it. Folks on the right need to do that, and that's what we're doing, right? That's what I'm doing with my own kids. I'm looking back at these rules, and I'm deciding, why were these rules there? Maybe the foundations of Western civilization, these religious, virtuous foundations of Western civilization, maybe they were there for a reason. Maybe they're not just a scaffolding for the erection of Western civilization. Maybe they are fundamental. Maybe if you remove these foundations, if you blow up those foundations, if you suggest that all the values that we share are not based on those foundations, and you remove the foundations, the entire structure collapses. I recently debated Sam Harris, the famous atheist, in San Francisco, and there's a bit of a funny moment in the debate because it turned out that a lot of his values match my values because we live in a Western country. Right? And I turned to him and I said, so this is kind of weird, right? I'm a religious Jew, you're a total atheist, why do we share these values? And he said, well, I've studied a lot of world religions, and I've gotten some from Buddhism, and I've gotten some from my own head, and I've gotten some from rationality, and I've gotten some from John Stuart Mill. And I said, but Sam, we have the same values, and I didn't look at any of those things. So where exactly are your values coming from? Maybe it has to do with the fact that we grew up like 5 minutes from each other in North Hollywood in a Judeo-Christian country that stands on 3,000 years of Western history. Maybe it's that. This is what we're fighting for. We're not just fighting about policy. We're not just fighting about child tax credits, although those are important. We're not just fighting about abortion, although that is vitally important. We are fighting about the meaning of human life. We are fighting about what human dignity is worth and what our purpose is in the universe. And if we lose that battle, there are no other battles to be fought. So whatever you can give tonight, I've done this pitch before, but I really mean it. Double it if you can. Right? If you can increase it by 10%, do it. Because there's not too much you can commit to all of this. Sometimes I look at my daughter, and she, as I say, she's 4, and she's just gorgeous, and she's, we're incredibly lucky to have her. Thanks to living in the greatest civilization in the world, she about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. We went in for a, she had a flu and she started throwing up and she was fainting while she was throwing up. So we went into the hospital and they did an ultrasound of her chest and they couldn't get a full ultrasound, but they said, go see a cardiologist. It turns out she had a giant hole in her heart. And so we had to go to the hospital in thank God, we live in America. So we went to the hospital and we had the surgery. It was an emergency, but it was safe. It was healed. She's totally fine now, thank God. And, you know, there are a lot of sleepless nights involved with that sort of thing. It was actually the same hospital with the same surgeon that Jimmy Kimmel's kid had surgery, which is why I find it just distasteful. And Jimmy Kimmel brings his kid out to talk about Obamacare. My kid had the same doctor, same hospital, and I don't think it confers expertise on Obamacare. Side note. But but when I look at my daughter and you think about, you know, passing what we've gotten, right, passing this foundation down to future generations, and I think about how do we do that? How do we succeed in a culture that's so stacked against us? All I keep coming to is my favorite verse from the Bible, Isaiah 8:10, Utsa etu visufar dabru davar velo yakum ki Immanuel. Right? Let them plan their plans. Let them say their words. They will fail because God is with us. God is with us. And God is with us if we make room in our hearts for him. God is with us if we follow his plan. And God is with us if we are with him. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You have been listening to Ben Shapiro, who was with us last night here in Southern California at a special, annual dinner that we do in Southern California with a lot of our supporters, several hundred people gathered. And Ben, as always, as I mentioned earlier, poignant and on point, very encouraging, but challenging. And I want to challenge you. Look, just because people want to disagree with you or attack you or marginalize the views that you have, that's all the more reason that we must speak up. As Christians, we know the truth, and we should speak the truth, and we should live the truth. Now, speak it in love, but speak the truth nonetheless. It is critical. And part of what I shared last night is there's the reason the left is so, unhinged in their opposition to the president. It's because this president is systematically dismantling the infrastructure of big leftist government, and they've never seen that before. This is an opportunity for us to restore the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, as it was intended to be. And it requires policy changes. It requires changes in our government, and that's not going to come without resistance. And all of that we work for so that we can proclaim truth, we can live truth. We can teach our children the values that we have, passing it on to the next generation. All of that is at stake if we have the type of government that we had in the last 8 years and the type of government I believe Hillary Clinton would have continued. And we cannot take our hands off of government. We cannot disengage. We are here. Our system of government requires our participation. Someone is going to be shaping the future. Folks, I believe it should be us. It should be you. And so I want you to pray and consider how God might use you to make a greater difference, beginning in your home, but going beyond that. All right, folks, out of time for today. I want to thank you for joining. It's been great having you along with us. And again, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6. Where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.